So can I start? Oh, perfect. So first of all, let me tell you that I'm extremely happy to be in here, that people who invite the loop quantum cosmology are listening to me. I'm going to talk about the loop quantum cosmology holonomic corrections. And it's pretty much a shortcut of a paper that I have made with Łukasz Schulz and Zygmunt Lalak. So I'm going to talk about the phenomenology of the loop corrections. All of the equations are going to be pretty much classical. I want to quantize as little as possible, and in fact, all of the calculations are extremely simple. I mean, this talk is going to be on the very basic things. If I will say things that you know very well, please forgive me, and if I will say something which you cannot understand, please interrupt me and ask me questions. Of course, I'm going to talk about the cosmology, first of all, yes, because I can't really say how many of you know the details of that, about the background evolution of the FRW cosmology with the holonomic loop corrections, and these are things which are very well known from many papers, and then about the evolution of the scalar metric perturbations and about the effective convex sonic horizon. These are things that we have discovered in the paper. And last but not least, about the power spectra of the initial energy density perturbations. And this is pretty much the most important part. I mean, this is what we measure, in fact, yes? So perhaps we could check some LQC predictions by that. All right, so we know Friedman equations, yes, and we know that we need inflation to solve some cosmological problems. We know that we need to have a barotropic parameter around -1. So we shall have something like that to produce this barotropic parameter. And let's say that we do have inflation, yes? That we do have a strong Sklarov prediction. So then one can see that the scale factor is growing exponentially, and the commoving Hubble horizon is decreasing rapidly. I mean, what the commoving Hubble horizon is? When you say just about the Hubble horizon, you just have 1 divided by Hubble parameter, yes? And this is the size of the universe that you can see, but we could be a commoving observer, yes? And for a commoving observer, this would be the size of the horizon. And in fact, when we are analyzing the wave models, yes, in the equations, when you make a Fourier transformation, we are looking for the commoving Hubble horizon. So that's pretty much what's going to be a thing that will be extremely important for us later on. So, as we already said, the inflation is pretty much needed. We introduce a scalar field, and this is the most popular model. I mean, the 1 scalar field, but of course we could introduce many of them. And to have an inflation, we want the potential energy to be dominated. And these are 2 most popular potentials. Of course, here you can see the initial conditions, but of course the initial conditions could be anything. I mean, we could start the evolution of the scalar field from this point, and the kinematic energy would throw the scalar field to that point, and then inflation would start. It's pretty much dependent on the initial conditions, yes, since the initial energy density is extremely huge. And, of course, these fields during inflation are evolving very slowly, and one could see that in short periods, those fields are staying in one point, yes, and they have their own oscillations. Very little ones, and those oscillations produce inhomogeneities, and of course we can introduce some perturbations of energy density and pressure, since the scalar field gives us the energy density and pressure, yes. And from that, we know that since we have some perturbations of matter, we shall have some perturbations of metric, and we analyze only scalar metric perturbations. Why? Because vector perturbations decrease rapidly during inflation. I mean, we'll never have any information about them. The tensor perturbations are the initial gravitational waves. This is another subject. I mean, we aren't going to focus on that. And the scalar metric perturbations, we just choose a gauge. It's so-called Newtonian gauge. Of course, Misha told you yesterday that we shouldn't choose the gauge at the very beginning. But we had a discussion about that, and we agreed that I can choose the gauge right now from this point. All right? Oh, it is. I just have a metric. All right. So we'll discuss it all later on. All right. We have Einstein equations, yes? And normally, this is so far regular for W cosmology. From Einstein equations, you know that there is no anisotropic pressure. And in fact, for scalar, every scalar field, you don't have any anisotropic pressure. And since the holonomy loop corrections does not change the behavior of the scalar field pretty much, does not change this Hamiltonian, matter Hamiltonian, yes. So this will be the same thing for holonomy loop corrections. For inverse triad, it's not as bad. So Mishes right that for triads we shouldn't do it from the very beginning. But in here, we have a right to do that, all right? And then we make these are the Friedman equation for the perturbations. We already assume that these perturbations are equal, yes? And here we have a perturbation of energy density and pressure. And we use the speed of sound to get a full equation of motion. What's the speed of sound is? The square of speed of sound is the perturbation of pressure divided by a perturbation of energy density for a constant entropy perturbation. So, in fact, one could easily show that this is a derivative, yes? And we are going to... this is just the physical speed of sound, yeah? And one could see that we could introduce the commoving sonic horizon, which is pretty much like commoving Hubble horizon, and for very big scales, I mean, for k much smaller, k times speed of sound much smaller than a times h, yes, those perturbations are pretty much frozen. So if our commuting horizon decreases, so more scales are outside of the horizon, and they are frozen. Those who left inside are decreasing rapidly, yeah? So we are happy that many perturbations are outside of the horizon, so they can survive to later times, yes, and they can give us information about the inflation, about the very early universe. Oh, no. I just made a Fourier transformation, yes? So, it's like that. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, in cosmology, we don't really analyze any other models since we know that during inflation, this curvature, the special curvature disappears very fast, yes? And later on, perhaps it could dominate, but then the dark energy appears. So, I mean, this K has no chance to be very important in standard cosmological models. But, of course, I know that there's many models which things... For example, there are people who analyze the curvature being... the strange actions with strange things we've made with curvature, yes? And then they take the different K, and it's important in these models. But in 99% of the models, it doesn't matter. We just take K equals zero. So now let's take a look on the inflaton perturbations, yes? And one could show that in strong slower approximations, we pretty much have equation of this kind. Of course, it's not really true. I mean, we should have symmetric perturbations in this equation and so on. But this is approximation. I just want you to understand very basic things, all right? I mean, that they are really evolving very slow. That they are... Yeah. Oh, so you know the sort of parameters, so that's very good. Oh, I mean that they are really, really little, those slower parameters. Yeah. Okay, so then we have something like exponential expansion. We could introduce the conformal time, yes, and we can solve this equation and make use the Vronsky and so on, make many, many strange different things, and we have a result of that. All right? We know how the perturbations evolve. And then we introduce the power spectrum of those perturbations. So this is... I don't want you to know the details. It's enough that it's something like the square of model of the perturbation. So it's pretty much an amplitude, yes, of perturbations. But these are inflaton perturbations. We in fact, don't measure them. I mean, the inflaton disappears after inflation, yes? We have a reheating epoch, and we have no inflaton anymore. But still, we can observe some perturbations, I mean, from the WMAP data, yeah? And these perturbations are something totally different. Those physical perturbations that we can really observe are perturbations of a curvature. And so we shall introduce the perturbation of a curvature, commoving perturbation of a curvature, all right? And this is pretty much like a Mukhanov-Sasaki variable. This is a thing which is gauge-independent. In fact, it is introduced now in Newtonian gauge, but you could introduce it in any gauge, and it's gauge-independent. It's really a physical thing, and it's pretty much like a perturbation of energy density divided by energy density. So it's really a physical thing. I mean, this is really a thing that you can measure. All right, so one could calculate the power spectrum of that, and it's also an approximation. Yeah, but it's pretty much like that, and it's pretty flat. I mean, there's no strong K dependence, no strong scale dependence on that. All right? And then, since we know everything about the cosmology, yeah, we can introduce the Ashtekar variables, and construct a Hamiltonian out of them. We can introduce the loop correction, and then I will skip that because you all know that 10 times better than I do. And then we have the C variable change. And since we think only about the holonomic correction, the P variable doesn't change at all. And all right. And then we can introduce the quantum of length, which is just the square root of this field, yeah, basic field. And then it is fine quantized. We have this J, and we don't really know what the value of J is. I mean, there is no specific value of J chosen by nature, so it could be 1 or it could be 10 to the power of 12. I don't know. And then we introduce the critical energy density, and oh, there is missing 2 in here. Yes. Oh yeah, I'm going to talk. Oh yeah, I also put the upper bound on J. But in fact, yeah, of course. I mean, for example, you need to have atoms, yes, in the universe, so it cannot be too big. I mean, if it's but I made some upper bound for J. But all right, this upper bound is very huge, and we have many
yes,
values.
Some theoretical reasoning why to consider the representation.
Oh, so I would be glad to listen about that later on. Really? Ah. All right. So. We also have a critical energy density, yes, and it's the maximal energy density in our model. And, of course, we use reduced Planck mass equal 1, yes? So, in fact, for big J's, it's around 1 divided by J, critical energy density. All right, and this is also what everybody knows. I mean, this graph was in many papers and so on. This is the evolution of a scale factor in the Hubble parameter, and solid lines are the evolution in the loop-corrected universe, and the dashed ones are evolution in the regular FRW cosmology, yes? And here you have the modified Friedman equations, and the brackets are something extra made by LQC. So this bracket goes to 1 when energy becomes small. And, yes? Oh, sorry? Oh, here? Oh, no, this is a time. I mean, here you have 0. Positive times is expanding universe. Negative times is shrinking universe. I mean, why? It's a normal time. I just, to make this graph, I just assume that omega is not less than minus 1.
What is the function behavior of
A? Oh, it's growing. I mean, but it's growing, of course. This is just a graph. I mean, I don't say what kind of function is that. I know that it's growing since it's,
All right.
I mean, who cares? I mean, this is just a graph. No, understand me well. I don't think about any specific model. It's just, I'm just trying to say that A is evolving, and on the very beginning, Hubble parameter is growing, and then it's decreasing, yeah? And that's, it's... Yeah, don't focus on details. I mean, no, you are right. This is our. But what is really important, I mean, here we have a half of a critical energy density, yes? And many people think that this period will solve some cosmological problems. I mean, because during that period, effective Kommwick-Sonnig horizon decreased really, really. I mean, here it has infinite value, and here it has finite value, so it decreased infinitely. But in fact, we'll show that it won't help in anything. I mean, that we still need to have normal inflation, scalar fields, and so on. Yes, and we introduce effective variables. We can put them in the Friedman equations, and they would look pretty much like a regular Friedman equations, but with those effective variables. So, we think about the perturbed universe, and let me say on the very beginning that we consider the the very, very huge case. I mean, we already want to consider super horizons case since they are most important for us, and since we don't really know how to do it without that assumption. But, alright, so in fact, those perturbations are the function of time in our calculations. But we do have we modify the Shaka variable by this correct, alright, by this psi, yes, we have a lapse function. And then also we need the assumption that we have no isotropic pressure, but it's all right for a holonomy correction, we really don't have this isotropic pressure. And then we have an equation of motion for metric perturbation. And these are exactly the same equation of motion like for regular FRW cosmology, but we have enough perturbations of effective variables on the right-hand side. So it really pretty much looks like a normal FRW, yeah? With little differences. And then we construct the effective speed of sound, and we just need to add those things in here, and everything will be fine. And you can show easily that for without when you... All right, yeah? In the perturbations, I mean, I'm not assuming that it is from the equations. It comes from the Einstein equations. I mean, but in fact, look, I'm considering a super Hubble's case, yeah? So those perturbations are pretty much isotropic and homogeneous, all right? Of course, they are not exactly isotropic and homogeneous, but they are as isotropic and homogeneous as they could be. So, yeah, of course you're right. I couldn't just solve the Hamilton equations like that, having the k dependence in here. But that's why I make this trick. And I think it's rather fair, because anyway we want to focus on the super Hubble's case, yeah? They are perturbations perturbations of metric. Oh, but this is the other type of correction, first of all. And Misha was analyzing the... Alright, so I will answer for that question. Let's say that we have a FRW metric, yes? So, this is FRW metric, and you can construct a Hamiltonian, and then from Hamilton equations you could have a LQC equation of motion, yes? And then we say that we have this situation. Yes, and we can do that. I mean, there's still no k-dependence, so nothing wrong happens. And we still can have a... Of course, one could say that this is something stupid. I mean, since we have no k-dependence, we have no perturbations. But we are just saying that we are on super horizons case, and then k-dependence doesn't really matter. Yeah.
If you have inflation, then you will have this Transplanckian problem, because it's not enough, in my opinion, to just have super Hubble, because if you have like more than 70 or 75 defolding, then the length scale, if you just look at the length scale that you're talking, that we observe today, they will become Transplanckian.
But
like they will be less than your scale, which is giving you the correction, the Planck scale.
But who cares about more than 75 e-folds? I mean, these are information about... Of course I don't have, but I will see only those 75. I mean, you're talking about information... Or 60, yeah, 60.
So I think at least, perhaps, any of you point, we are only going to see 60. We don't know what happens anywhere.
This is an extremely effective thing. I mean, this is really a... simple steps, yes? And I just want to focus on things that we can measure later on. Let's say that we have 10,000. There are models that gives.
So now, what, if you want to track the evolution from, let's say, this, you know, whatever, using whatever consistent theory, then you will have a problem at least in the, when you decide on the initial condition, because at the initial moment when the inflation is starting, let's say 104 back, then your scales, the same scale that you are measuring now, would be would be smaller than the Planck scale. So there may be some corrections.
For the initial?
Yeah. There may be some corrections in that phase.
But
right now, like in the standard cosmology, what you do is you just start with the boundary vector.
All right. But then you would have to do what Jerzy Lewandowski and Professor Ashtek are doing. Yes, then you would have to have this quantum scalar field with a quantum background and do all of those things. I mean, all right, but those initial conditions are pretty much very, very deeply under the horizon, yes? I mean, when the perturbations start to evolve, they are very deeply under the horizon. Then the moving horizon decreases and so on. So I mean that, of course...
It doesn't matter. It's the length itself is less than the Planck scale when you are looking at the fluctuations. So there could be corrections from that.
Of course, but what...
We should let him
finish and then... I mean, of course, there are so many details that we need to work on, yes? But pretty much if I would like to consider all of them, I probably wouldn't do anything. But of course you are right that I should say about it.
Yeah.
All right. So, we have an equation of a motion for metric perturbations, yes? And this is exactly the same equation of motion like for the standard FLW case, but with effective speed of sound. In place of regular one. And what is the difference? I mean, one could see that the effective speed of sound becomes infinite for energy densities equal half of a critical one. Yes? So there are three places where a commutative sonic horizon becomes infinite. Two times when the universe is decreasing, it reaches the half of a critical energy density for a critical energy density, and when it's evolving, yes, it's also reach half of a critical energy. Oh, in fact, it should have a row in here. I mean, here is zero and here is zero. All right, but I'm not really good in artistic things, as you already have mentioned. But in fact, all of the scale, all of the perturbations are going to be under the horizon, yes, in 3 moments. And so it means that they are going to die, really. I mean, they're going to decrease exponentially fast in that region. So, of course, we could solve some problems of standard cosmology in that region between the critical energy density and the half of critical energy density when the Hubble parameter is growing, but then we would lose the information about the perturbations from that period. So, in fact, and the perturbation, the frozen perturbations, are this relic which gives us information about the very early universe. We don't have this relic for that period, yes? So, in fact, many, many strange things can happen. Pigs can fly in that period, but we will never be able to say so. Yes?
Just one question. Why do we assume that we lose the information?
Oh, we don't assume. If scales are under the horizon, they are just the perturbations are dying. They can't survive because they go outside. And here, since the horizon becomes infinite, they have no chance. And even, you can show that, Even if you would have a scale which is larger than infinite, even then it would decrease. I mean, even super horizon scales are decreasing in that period, in that regime, all of the high energies regime.
That's exponential decay.
I mean, this is very fast decay. Exponential is a approximation, but it is a very fast decay.
You have to remember that the time scale
are very short. Look, if you have a slow roll inflation from the very beginning, then you have a long period in which you have this decreasing. And if you don't have a slower inflation, in whole of this region, they are decreasing. So this short time is enough. I mean, even in that region, I mean, they are decreasing.
At the very beginning, you mean even close to the bounds?
Oh, yeah, even if you have a slower, I mean, of course, in close to the bounds, the field is effectively very kinematical, like, yes? Because, yeah. The, like, you can see that the you can see. But you can force the field to have initial conditions of that type. That I mean,
yes,
let's say
the solution is unstable.
Oh yeah. Of course, it is unstable. But let's say that the field can go to attractor amazingly fast. I mean, all right. I don't want to start discussion about the attractor solution. So, of course. On the very beginning, we shouldn't have a inflationary solution. So it really even helps us with killing those perturbations, because I mean then all, even the scales which are in here, I mean outside of the horizon, are dying very fast.
I just have to start an element. So, did you mean to put
zero?
Oh
no! I was mentioning that I made a mistake when making that. So this is real critical. Yes, yeah, sorry. All right, and one should remember that it's not that effective field of sound is not a physical velocity. I mean, we don't really have, infinite value of the speed of sound. We don't really have any problems with Eisen's theory of relativity and so on. I mean, this is something which appears in the equation, and we know that this is analogy of the speed of sound in regular FRW cosmology. All right, and then we can think about the perturbations of the scalar field, and since the Holomyi loop correction doesn't change the equation of motion for inflaton and for its perturbation, we know that it's still approximately true. Yes, but the slower parameters are changed by the Holomyi loop correction, and the epsilon parameter is the parameter which tells you if we have an inflation, and the eta parameter, which is the, which looks pretty much like, and the eta parameter is pretty much like that. Alright? In the slower approximation. And eta parameter tells you how long inflation takes. Alright, so we can calculate that. We know how to do that. Oh, this is the potential. And, this is the, it's a problem. This is not the prime, alright? Alright, and we introduce the effective potential, which is pretty much like an effective energy density. I mean, for a slower approximation, we don't really have a kinematical one. And we know how to calculate the power spectrum of the curvature perturbations, and it's pretty much like a power spectrum of a regular. This is all slower approximation and so on. I mean, this, you don't really, all right, you don't really need a very slow, no, let me tell you, all right, I will answer.
We could have also done fast mode parameters, and maybe they will be useful here.
Oh, I mean, all right. We don't really need very, very strong roll approximation to have these results. Yes, and this correction gives you, like, it doesn't really makes your epsilon parameter extremely huge. For example, if your energy density is equal half of a critical energy density. So still you can have some slower, so still the slower parameters are not amazingly big in there.
If epsilon becomes close to 1.
Oh, but it can be, I mean, this can be 10 to the minus 10. So if you get, you have an extra 2 from that, I mean, it can be 10 to the minus 10. All right, it can be 10 to the minus 1. It's still all right.
Can I ask you a basic question? Just to understand, just given the background confluence. So, you have a bounce and then you have inflation in the expanding phase. In the contracting phase, what do you have? I mean, what is your energy density?
Oh, this is, I will ask you, so let me just end. And this is very, very fine question. I would love to tell you something about it, but so perhaps let me just finish the. Alright, so we just know that we have a power spectrum of a curvature perturbation, pretty much like in FRW case, but multiplied by this bracket, and it's always smaller than 1. So in fact, we need a higher energy scale to have the same Kobe normalization. Yes, so in fact, the Holomyi correction rises the energy scale of a freeze out of perturbations. And if you want to avoid fine-tuning, we would like to have a energy of a Kobe normalization of this freezing out the perturbation, 6 default before the end of inflation, around 10 to the 16 GeV. So if you want to avoid the fine-tuning, the critical energy density needs to be larger than that, and that gives us a bounds for J. But of course, we could assume that we have a sober inflation. I mean, it's harder to get the sober inflation since we need to raise the energy density level. But still, all right. And last thing, we could introduce the spectral index. And the spectral index is something that we, this really important thing. I mean, it really often says you if some model with certain potential is good or wrong, yes. And the loop correction also changed the value of that, pushing many models to the right data. I mean, more models fit the data if you assume that there can be LQC correction, holonomy correction. So in fact, we know even less than before. Even more models can be good because of that. So pretty much what I wanted to say. Thank you very much. How do I know what? Oh, these are just perturbations of my, you have alright, you have four types of four types of scalar metric perturbations, and you have a freedom of gauge. Oh, I mean, you still have a gauge freedom in LQC, or we don't. But since we are analyzing super Hubble scales. Oh, no, 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 I don't introduce that thing. I mean, this appears from equation of motion. I just take a Poisson bracket and it looks like that. We will discuss it. All right.